Accession number 30623, reel 9.
Accession number 30623, Mr. Terry O'Leary, reel 9. Now, anything else happened before the battalion come back? It's the first battalion come back to Ballykinlar, don't they?
Yeah, that was late 48, I think. Pardon me. I think it was 48 that they returned. Yeah, I think it was. And they had a big ceremony where they had the two battalions, one at each end, the 1st and 2nd battalion, one at each end of both, two at the end of the square, and the band played the regimental marches, and the two battalions marched into one, and that was the end of the 2nd battalion, and they reformed as the 1st battalion, the Royal Ulster Rifles, like an amalgamation parade. That was... worth saying.
So, and what were your first impressions? This is going to be your home, the 1st battalion.
Yeah, I was really pleased, because now I was in the regular battalion of the Royal Ulster Rifles with their own pipe drums, which pipe band, which was really something out of this world. I loved the Irish pipes, the tunes, and the regimental band had a very good... regimental silver band, and everywhere if you went on the route marches on a Sunday morning, a Saturday morning we used to do, and each company would be led by an Irish piper, and that was, and of course you then had this business, which I mean I'd learnt of it, where the there was a bit of dispute between the Catholics and the Protestants over in Northern Ireland, had been, didn't interest me one iota, I never got mixed up in it, but because there were Ulster men, Orange men and Catholics in the same battalion, they would alternate the tune, and there's a Orange tune called the Sash, which they would play, followed immediately for a Catholic tune, the Wearing of the Green, and so you both learnt the words to the songs, and I knew the words of the Sash as well as any Orangeman, although I was a Catholic, and it didn't bother me one iota. It was just a song to me, and I never heard any problems, never saw any scraps, never heard any dissension between Catholics and Protestants all the time I was in the Royal Ulster Rifles. Never heard of any. What happened when they went home was a different thing, because some lived in the Falls Road, and some, which was one section, and others lived in, I can't recall the name of the other road, but when they got home they may have gone back to their own little enclaves, but while they were in the regiment it was completely frowned upon, and I never heard any trouble, never.
Now, which company were you posted? It looks like D Company.
I was posted to D Company.
Were you always with them?
No, originally I was in A Company of the Royal Ulster when they first formed.
When you first joined, so you were with A Company?
A Company, yeah.
Now, it says you were in sort of normal army routine. Now, what was normal army routine? Well, you're at Ballykinlar camp, aren't you?
Yes, yeah. The normal army routine was... weapon training, throwing grenades, doing route marches, square duty, square bashing as they called it, but no what I would call army exercises, like, you know, apart from grenade firing, rifles and Bren guns on the ranges, rifle shooting, and used to go out to the rifle ranges, but no big, like, battalion in attack or anything like that.
Well, you seem to have done a Guard of Honour. Tell me about that.
Yes, that was rather interesting, because at the Royal Agricultural Show in Belfast, the Queen and Prince Philip were going to the Royal Agricultural Show, and so...
she wouldn't be the Queen then, would she? 48, 49? Coronation's 52?
No, she was Princess, what? Yeah, I said the Queen, I wouldn't maybe say that.
No, it's all right, just so they know.
Yeah, but anyway, they came to, Philip was with her, came to to this agriculture show, and I was on the Guard of Honour, and Philip and Her Majesty inspected the Guard of Honour, and of course by that time everybody was wearing, you had to wear your medals, not just the bars, and so I had my medals from the Navy, and the four, and one of them was the Italy Star, and he asked me where I served, that's Philip, where I served with battalion in Italy. And I said, I never served with a battalion in Italy. So I said, I was in the Royal Navy. And he said, in the Royal Navy? Why are you in that uniform? And I said, no, he said, why are you in the army? And I said, well, after I was demobilized, I rejoined and joined the regular army. And then he said, and which, was it? I think he said, which do you prefer? Or which do you like the best? Something like that. And I didn't know what to say, because he was in the Navy, had served in the Navy. My CO was there. And the first thing that came into my head, I just said, it's an honour to serve in any of Her Majesty's forces. And he just said, oh, and walked off. And my regimental sergeant major, who was making up the entourage, came past me and told me I should have been a bloody diplomat. I recall that very well, yeah.
Now, anything else happening in it? You're there from, what, 48 to 50?
Yeah. In 49, my wife and I came home, my girlfriend and I came home from Northern Ireland and got married in from my house in Acton, where I lived. So Kay and I got married then, yeah, in January 1949.
Anything else happening? You're just a corporal still? Not
yes,
just
yeah,
a corporal.
I know what you mean, yeah. That was my rank, yeah. Corporal, yeah. Still a corporal then.
Anything, any other things you remember?
Only the fact that I suppose that slightly amusing, was that after we were married, obviously my wife came back because we were still serving, and when I couldn't see her very often because they were in a separate barracks to the one I was in. Well, not same building, but separate area block. And so we went to Belfast for a weekend, and went to the hotel, stayed in the hotel. When we came out of the hotel, came down the steps to get back to the station, and just as we were coming down the steps, who should be passing but to the wife's company sergeant major, who looked at us and frowned, and then when he got back to barracks, she was questioned and explained that we were married, and that we thought that was rather funny. Yeah.
Now, anything else, Pat, before you go to Colchester, early 50, anything else?
No, I can't recall
so
any.
So what happened when you go to Colchester? Which barracks you go to?
Oh, that's a good question. You know,
that's okay.
There were so many there, I can't remember the name of them. But I know we used a barracks that was vacated by the Argyll and Sutherland Highlanders. The Argyll and Sutherland Highlanders had been there before us, and that was the barracks we went in. And the state of some of the lockers, and that was wooden wardrobe things. They were thrown out of the window and replaced by new lockers. But
what were the barracks like? Were they in good nick compared to what you used to?
Yes, yeah, yeah, quite. We were stationed next to the Royal. Our barracks was next to the Royal Military Hospital in Colchester. I recall that, they were then talking about going to Khartoum, I think. That was the rumour, that the battalion was going to Khartoum. And I was told that, because you did as you were told, obviously, that I was going to be trained as a stretcher bearer or first aid or something.
Now, how do you feel about that?
Well, not too bad, because I'd say I worked in a hospital kept my ears and eyes open, and that, you know, I was rather intrigued. And
did you actually get training?
Yes, in fact, I was on a ward and I did give some injections in the buttocks, I remember, with hypo. And it was only, I think it was about 8 days, 10 days, I saw, because I put myself forward, I was, you know, keen is the word, I suppose. And I asked if I could see some operations, and I saw a tonsillectomy and one for a polyps in the nose, which didn't bother me one iota.
Were you just a stretch bearer, or were you learning to a ward orderly as well?
No, I was just learning to be... They were teaching you to do first aid.
And were you then a stretcher bearer, or did you stay? You know, you.
No. I did. I wasn't. I hadn't any medical.
No, what I mean is, after you'd done the training, were you a stretcher
bearer? Oh no, well I hadn't got to that. But what happened was that you then sat an examination, and the major who took the squad asked me if I would consider transferring to the Royal Army Medical Corps. That was in Colchester Military Hospital. Before we left, I used to try and learn as much as I could about everything I could, and obviously I did well on the examination, and he said, would you consider transferring? And I said, no, I wouldn't stay as a, and I never did any medical training after that. I just went back as a normal corporal in a rifle.
So you never became a stretcher bearer?
Oh, no. Never saw anything more medical after that.
Now, so you thought you were going to the Sudan, what, to Khartoum?
Khartoum.
So what's the next stage? When do the rumours start about Korea?
What would it be about? I think Korea started...
Well, you go out in 1st of October.
I think it started in July. I'm not quite sure when the North invaded the South. But at that time, we then moved as a battalion up to Diss in Thetford in Norfolk, where there was a big army training ground, rather like, not quite the size of, but like Salisbury Plain, a big training area.
So did you go to Diss or Thetford? They're not the same...
We went to Thetford, but we went into Diss, you know. Some of the places there, the villages, were just empty villages that the army had taken them over. And I don't know whether Diss was one of them, but I know Diss, sometimes we did route marches from Thetford to Diss, and we did things like battalion in the attack. And
what do you remember of the training?
I remember a plane supposed to be strafing crashed, RAF fighter. That I think that was near Diss. There's lots of like pine trees there, and I remember a plane crashing when it struck something. I don't know what, very low he was, came whistling over the top and crashed, and we were firing live ammunition, and we had Centurion tanks with us from the 8th Hussars, who were later to join us going out to Korea.
And how realistic was it, the training?
Oh, quite realistic. I mean, you see a company in the attack, and four-inch mortars would be laid some, you know, 700 yards in front while you were advancing, and it was live ammunition. It was quite. We were joined by the Gloucesters and the. Oh, were we? I know the RNF, Royal Northumberland Fusiliers, were there, or a section of them. So yeah, it was. And then, of course. After the train,
what about the call up of the reserves?
After we were back to Colchester, and they then decided that it was Korea we were going to. That's when the buzz got round that it was Korea, and they were calling back reservists, and some of them were regular ex-regular soldiers who were then on the reserve, So obviously a class reserve, which meant they would be called back in an emergency, and some of them were chaps from the 8th Army who'd been up the desert. They were wearing the Africa Star, and of course when they
heard, what state were they in, these reserves? I mean, how did they feel about being called back?
Well, they weren't happy about being called back, and some of them, I remember one chap came and reported with his two children, his wife had left him, and he was left with the two children, grossly overweight. If he went a pound, he must have gone about 21 stone. And, I mean, completely unfit. Never. But he had been drawing reservist pay, and he had been stating, as I had to and everybody had to, that you were physically fit and you got a monthly check. I think it was, I'm pretty sure it was monthly. And so... really, he had been drawing money under false pretences, and they took the children into the cookhouse, fed them, and then there was a sort of a little talk amongst the officers and the CO, and he was sent back as medically unfit. Another chap who I had in my platoon was a... he had been out in the Far East, in fact had been captured by the Japanese, and had been in a prisoner of war camp that was guarded by South Koreans. And he was taking a very dim view about this, and so much so that he was talking to the platoon, and I reported it to the platoon officer. That got back through the channels, and he was taken out and sent back home again. Why they called him up to Korea, having been a prisoner of war, I've no idea, but he was called back.
And they fitted in all right in the end, most of them?
Oh, yes, yeah, they did. Yeah, they did. Yeah, they were, you know, quite well. I mean, they were learning the new drill, and so they were being trained as Ulster riflemen.
Now, what about the... any other preparations for going overseas? You go on the 1st of October, but anything else in preparation?
Not that I can recall.
But what about the voyage out? You go on the Embraer?
Yeah, we left Liverpool. I think, what was his name, Strachey? A Minister of War saw us off at Liverpool, and we went down the Irish Sea, and I recall that one Welsh lad, whether he was from our regiment, I can't recall, because there was lots of RASC and Hussars and lots of different, not regiments, but other than the Ulster Rifles, and support regiments. And he was a Welshman, and I was told... I did actually see him enter the sea, but I was told that he said that he worked on a farm, and he had been called up, and there was only his mother and one brother to run the farm, and he was going back to Wales, and he went over the side of the Empire Pride. There were long ropes. I never knew what they were for, whether they were for the lifeboats, but they swept along the side of the boat, and... he grasped one of these, slid down, and then went into the sea. And when we got to Gibraltar, we used to get a paper issued from the radio room to give you the news. And we heard that his body had been washed up on the Welsh coast, actually, and dead. But he was a national serviceman, I think.
Now, so what happened next then? What do you remember about the... what were conditions like on the ship? I mean, you were an old sailor.
Yeah, I didn't find them, you know. We were doing training. I mean, we were doing PT. We were throwing, like, buoys or some metal objects over the side and firing Bren guns and rifles. We, you know, not all together, obviously, but in sections. So we were training on board the ship. We weren't just loafing.
What were your mess decks like compared to what you were used to?
You know, no problem. I can't recall a great deal about it. It's strange how certain things you recall and other things just a blur. I never, you know, never had any problem. I was never seasick, although some of them were, and you could smell the, you know, like on the other troop ship I was on, you could smell the in the heads that it was a bit smelly, but you expect that at sea, like, you know.
So what do you remember about the trip out, the route?
I remember we went to, we went up the Suez Canal to port, up down to Portside, up the Suez Canal to the Red Sea. Went to, I just can't think of the name of a big place in the Red Sea. A port.
Aden.
Aden, quite right. Yeah, we landed at Aden, not for long. I remember that they were drinking very cold beer, and so was I, and everybody had terrible headaches, and the medical officer said it was the result of this cold beer in a hot climate. But the headache was phenomenal, really. But quite a few people suffered from it. Then we went to Singapore. I'm not sure if we called in at Hong Kong. I don't think we did. And we went to Busan in Korea.
Now, what happened when you got to Korea?
After we disembarked, oh, we were played in, that was one thing. We came alongside, and there was an American, Afro-American band playing jazz. And we thought this was all very marvellous, because they were playing all the jazz tunes, and quite different to the regimental bands that we've been used to. They would march up and down, and you know, it was more like a, I don't know, what do you call it? More like a show. But they played us alongside with all these tunes, and that was, I recall that.
And you got there on the 5th of November, so it'd take you just over, well, 5 weeks,
basically. Yes, yeah. Yeah, to Busan. And then we went by, we went by lorry. There was a bit of a kerfuffle about getting transport. In the end, the Americans took us up in, I think they call it, we had 3 tons. I think theirs were 2.5 ton. And we went up to Ujongbu, I think it's called. And how?
Whereabouts is that?
Going north from Pyongyang, from Busan. I can't recall
that far. In your notes, it says you went by train to Suwon.
Ah, perhaps we did then. And then from Suwon, we went to, from Suwon, we went to this.
Because it says you were training around there for a bit as well.
Yeah, they were doing well, because everybody had been cramped up on the ship, so they did do a bit of marching and you know, route marches and up the hills of low hills of around Suwon.
And then you went by lorry to
Ujongbu, where we were housed in a silkworm factory. I'm not sure whether it was where they did training or, but we were housed in there.
Now, what do you remember what you were doing there?
Well, we're not doing a lot there until...
now, you see, your notes say you were on anti-guerrilla operations.
That was... I was just going to say, that was the first thing that happened, was that our company was called to a village we were going by lorry transport, because there were some guerrillas up in near one of the villages, or around the village, that was coming down and terrorising the villagers to give for food and that. And D Company, of which I was in then, was ordered to go and sort this out. And I went out, I was sent out in a jeep, along with another rifleman, in advance of the company arriving there, to a crossroads where we were to be at the crossroads to divert the traffic, as opposed to, you know, you would have thought military policemen would do it, but there were no military policemen us then. And so we were at the crossroad, and when they arrived, we were told to direct them off to the right. And of course, we were there for a couple of hours at night prior to the lorries arriving, and we were by a... There was a cutting with a railway bridge, and so we were standing by this railway bridge, which was adjacent to the crossroads, smoking a cigarette, and a train went under the bridge and stopped. And I heard a load of shouting, American voices. Then someone said, "There they are." I heard them say, "There they are." And the next minute, we were opened up with what I now know to be M16 carbine fire. They thought, what happened after I reported it, that, you know, that when the battalion arrived, company arrived, questions were asked, and I was informed that what happened was it was a prisoner of war train. The Americans were taking prisoners of war, and some of them had escaped from the train, and they thought that us being up there on the above were a couple of the escaped prisoners, although why they thought they'd be smoking cigarettes up there, I don't know. But anyway, we just crouched down behind the stonework of the bridge, and the train then moved off. That was one of the highlights. But in actual fact, when we got to this village, the guerrillas had gone, and in the event, we didn't see any, or and returned to the battalion after about 48 hours.
So, and that village was the Kap Yong.
Was it?
Yeah. But you didn't. Yeah, nothing happened there.
No. We never saw any. It was all very quiet, and it was decided to pull out again.
Now, what's your next move? First, before we go on, what was the weather like? Because this is November, late November.
Yeah, it was windy. And the only protective clothing we had, we didn't have any, but when it did finally arrive, was a string vest. And we were told that this would keep, you know, although it had great big, like, square holes in it, as I'd call them, made like a fisherman's net, they were told these did keep you warm. And we had what they called wind cheaters, which were, I'm pretty sure they were camouflaged, yeah, pulled down and tied at the waist, and had a hood and trousers that you tucked in. You wore them over your uniform, and it proved that they did keep the wind out, but they never kept the rain out or the snow out, and that was terrible. They were absolutely useless. That was the only winter clothing that we had. I think some ladies from the regiment in Belfast were knitting gloves and sending those out to help out, and we did get couple of tots of rum now and again, but it was cold.